This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. This is the Ray Lucia Show featuring Johnny Dean and
starring you. Now, you almost had it right, okay? In our TV segment, I teased you a little bit because you had said featuring you, Ray Lucia, and then you put me. And I said, no, I'm the feature player. You're the star. Now, you said featuring Johnny Dean, which is good, and starring you, but got to understand, the star has to go first. You gave yourself second billing.
Well, I was actually going to say the star this hour is going to be Lynn Rowe, because Lynn will be joining in just a bit. So I will take second fiddle to Miss Rowe.
Does that put me at third fiddle?
You're third fiddle.
All right.
Yeah, you're down the line. We were talking about, before the break, this whole business of a recession, 75% of the economists, there are like 300 economists surveyed, and they're all saying recession's coming. Where have you heard that, by the way, before?
You know,
coming for the last 10 years.
I was just going to say, I started here. First time I heard that, another recession was coming in late 2011. Remember with the downgrade? Ooh. Remember
August of 2011,
and people started bailing out. There's a whole month there.
And our good buddy did what?
Said, I'm going to cash.
And I think he's still there.
He probably is. It's been 8 years. Nothing happened. Of course not. Economists are wrong all the time. Analysts are wrong all the time. But if you notice, when your company doesn't meet analysts' expectations, it's not the analysts who are wrong. It's your company
that did something wrong. Yeah, that's right. So Schwab's Liz Saunders breaks down some of the popular recession indicators. I'll get to that momentarily. I saw this article. I have to talk to Lynn about this. And I'll read from it perhaps a little bit this segment, maybe next segment. Ellen Uzelek. I don't know Ellen, but I think this was originally published on Research Magazine. I planned for widowhood, but got a lot wrong. I want to ask Lynn about this because she is a specialist. In fact, when I first met Lynn, her area of expertise was working with widows, single moms, people that mostly the female marketplace, because they have different needs, significantly different than their male counterparts, mostly because they live longer. So we'll get to that with Lynn Rowe coming up here. But let's start with Liz Ann Saunders, her take on the six popular recession indicators. Sit back, folks. Relax. It is the Ray Program. Oh, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Were you born with a silver spoon in your mouth?
No. I wasn't born on the bayou.
Oh, no.
Neither was Fogarty, by the way. I should like to point that out.
Or the Green River, for that matter.
Or the Green River wasn't there. San Francisco. But you know what? He had me fooled.
There'll be a music reference to just about everything we talk about today.
Yes.
All right, so let's talk about this recession chatter that's out there. And incidentally, as John said, it's been out there for a while now.
Years.
And you just don't know when it's going to happen. So first, they talk about the unemployment rate. And it's hard to see a recession coming when the unemployment rate is as low as it is today. But as Saunders says, the unemployment rate is one of the most lagging of all economic indicators.
That's true.
And has historically been during recessions, not in the lead up to recessions. In other words, a rising unemployment rate doesn't cause recessions. Recessions cause the unemployment rate to rise.
No question. Because what happens is people stop spending money, right? So companies start to suffer. As soon as they realize they're suffering, the first thing they do is let employees go because they're the most expendable.
Biggest expense.
Right. But that's already after the recession has happened by virtue of the fact that people aren't spending.
Okay. The next one is the unemployment claims. The fact that claims recently broke out to the upside, she says, suggests we need to be on guard for the signal they're giving about the length of time between now and the next recession. If they continue to tick higher, the risk of a recession starting sooner rather than later will theoretically, I threw that in, move up.
It's all theory. There's nothing. I'll bet you could have found something very similar to that article, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, something very similar to that article in 2014.
Of course.
Says sometime before 2016, we're expecting a major
recession.
Well,
just think back to the late 1990s, right? 1996 was irrationally exuberant.
It was.
And you doubled your money in the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Right?
It seemed like the safe bet.
Consumer confidence. The Conference Board's measure of consumer confidence remains high in level terms, but is clearly off the peak. So now it's high, but it's off the peak. Therefore, that could be an indicator of a recession.
Consumer confidence is high is an indicator of something bad. Why is it that anytime something good happens, does it have to necessarily lead to something bad?
The leading economic index is at a peak as well, according to the Conference Board. Again, just because it peaked last September and declined in two of the subsequent 4 months, it must be an indicator that we're going into a recession. But I would make the argument that it didn't decline in the other 2 months.
But they leave that part of the equation out. And again, this has happened 4 or 5 times over the last 10 years, 9 years.
Then you've got the Federal Reserve model, the Bank of New York, shows a 24% chance of a recession. See, this is interesting because she didn't write, they show a 76% chance of no recession.
No, of course not. No, it's a 24% chance. What does that tell me?
And then the mother of all recession indicators, the spread between the 10-year and the 3-year, the yield on the 10-year and the 3-year.
The 10-year and the 3-year, okay.
Or 3-month, I'm sorry, did I say 3-year?
Yes.
The 3-month Treasury versus the 10-year Treasury. For what it's worth, it did briefly invert. When the short-term rates are higher than the long-term rates, that's called an inverted yield curve, and that theoretically predicts a recession.
Well, we've had as close to an inverted yield curve as you can have over many times over the last 7, 8, 9 years, especially over the last few years. And, you know, so far, nothing.
Well, the very, very inexpensive short-term money has actually been a driver of the economy, right? Because companies are able to borrow money at super cheap rates, and they can expand their businesses, which is one of the reasons why the unemployment rate is so low.
Unemployment rate's low. A lot of companies are doing the stock buyback, which, you know, increases the value, some would say artificially, of their stocks. We can get into all that. That's not really it. What's going to cause a recession is a lack of consumer confidence. They're going to stop spending. That's what happens. They get scared. They for whatever reason, something makes them flee. That's what creates a recession.
All right, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is a great hour to call, by the way. 844-729-7469. The program all about your money, your business, and your life. Emails also, raylucia.com, R-A-Y-L-U-C-I-A.com. May want to talk with Lynn Rowe about this as well. This is an interesting article that I saw just this morning by Wendy Swanson, titled, Why That MIGA Rate Is So Hot. Now, you've heard me talk about MIGAs in the past. Nobody seems to like them. Many people don't know about them. But she's saying, wait a minute, these rates are very, very hot. What's a MIGA, John?
Multi-year guaranteed annuity.
You said the A word.
I wasn't supposed to, but somebody had to bring it up.
Here's what she had to say. Now may be the perfect time to educate yourself on what to look for, as 2019 may well be the year that MIGA sales soar higher than we've seen in many years. Why would that be? The 2-3% interest rates we've painfully endured for the past decade are quickly being replaced by 3% to well over 4% guarantees. That's the G word.
We could say that still. We can say the guarantee word.
Based on the trending of Federal Reserve rates and 10-year Treasury notes, we can anticipate continued increases in MIGA rates across the board, opening up huge opportunities for investors looking for a safe, secure place to put their money.
Secure place to put their money, in many cases, a secure guaranteed income comes along with that.
So I have to tell you what the drawbacks are, because that's what I do. You buy a multi-year guaranteed annuity contract, and you get a rate that's 4% for the same time period. Maybe it's a 7-year, I don't know, 5-year, instead of a 3% rate offered at your bank. What are the differences? We'll tell you about that when we come back. Make sure you stay with us. Ratings of the companies we'll talk about. We'll talk about compensation to the broker. All these have an impact.
We'll talk about that actually probably more after the bottom of the hour. Because we've had somebody sitting in the green room.
Well, I might talk to her about it. How's that?
Well, perfectly
because she
fine
may know
me.
More about this than you. I don't know for certain, but she may.
May very well. I'm more the macroeconomist, economist. She's more the
micro person.
I'm not going to say that. That was you.
Lynn Rowe's up next. Stick around. It's the Ray Lucia Show. Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show, featuring now this segment, Lynn Rowe, certified financial planner. I was teasing you a little while ago, but we go back 25, 30 years, so I can afford to tease you without getting slapped, although you did threaten.
I did threaten.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me. I want to finish this discussion because I wasn't lying when I said you know more about MIGAs than John Dean, because they happen to be in your toolkit. But I'm reading Wendy Swenson, and let me just run through some of these things because people don't really understand how an insurance company can actually pay more than a bank, especially if the insurance company is fairly well rated, B+, et cetera. And incidentally, folks, there's nothing wrong with buying a MIGA from a B+ company, especially if you're getting 25% better rate of return, because most of them will still be in business 5 years later, 3 years later, 10 years
and
later.
A lot of them been in business 70 plus years. So,
the ratings, it's obviously not a government guaranteed or a CD with government insurance, but there is in most states a state guarantee fund. So there is some underlying guarantees.
And the industry backs each other up too.
Exactly. Now, they talk about compensation. One of the things that you do that I really do appreciate is you don't look at how much you get paid.
I have to ask a lot of times after I've, you know, done the business with somebody, by the way, how much do I get paid?
Right. the brokers that are going for the highest commish get a higher commission at the expense many times of the consumer. If you go for the lower compensation, that's how an individual can earn 4 when banks are paying 3. It's because you're making 50%, 30% of what the other broker earns.
Yeah.
You know what really used to irritate me about that is individuals that had good friends and they would, I don't know, prey, if you will, on their good friends and offer them the lower yield to get the higher compensation. But then when they were in a competitive situation, a person they don't even know, they would offer them the lower compensation
to
compete.
Yeah.
That's sick. That's really sad.
Yeah. It's malpractice.
Liquidation for terminal or chronic illness or long-term care. These MIGAs are no frills.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the other annuities in your bailiwick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you want the frills, you can get them.
There are annuities that have a guaranteed lifetime income, as you know. And in the event that somebody needs care, that income doubles during the time they need the care. So that's a big deal, too.
And they're very, very competitive contracts. But if you're just looking for, I want to put my money away for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years.
Different tools designed for different jobs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In most MIGAs, that's multi-year guaranteed annuity contracts. Think of them as CDs offered by insurance companies, usually pretty good-sized insurance companies with a state guarantee fund that will guarantee some percentage of the assets.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be like the normal annuities where you get to take 10% out each year. It's like an all-or-nothing thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Some of them have market value adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
A market value adjustment is what you get when you buy a bond. Let's say you buy a 10-year bond and interest rates go up. Do you get all your principal back? No, you don't. Well, there are market value adjustment MIGAs too. If you don't hold for the 5 years and interest rates have gone up, you might not get back all of your money. If interest rates have gone down, you might get back more than your money, just like a bond. Not all of them have that.
Right, right.
Some of them are just straight, you know, bullet
interest-bearing accounts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maturity options, you go from 30 days to 10 years, mm-hmm. just like a CD or anything else. And that's about it.
They're great tools and the right job, right? That's the thing. We've used those for years, as you know, in the strategies that we set up for retiring clients.
All right, I want to segue here to something that I actually learned from you about 25 years ago. Mm. When you first started in the business, your area of specialization was really mostly with widows mm-hmm. and single parents, but mostly older individuals who lost their spouse and mm-hmm. had nowhere to turn. Mm-hmm. So Ellen Uzelak, I don't know who she is, but she writes for Think Advisor and Research Magazine, said this about Judy Guidon. My husband Gil and I thought we'd done everything right when it comes to end-of-life planning. We had up-to-date wills, powers of attorney, and advanced directives for health care. But after he died last year, I discovered a lot we got right and a lot we got wrong.
Yep.
So they went on to list out a whole bunch of things that mm-hmm. perhaps you could comment on, because I know you do this stuff. Number one, carve out time to discuss your financials and end-of-life wishes. Talk to the family members, mm-hmm. and in particular, your spouse, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yep.
Create a repository for passwords and other need-to-know information. Mm-hmm. This is a biggie. She goes on to talk about her husband handled all the finances, knew all the pins by heart.
Yep, and she didn't have access.
Yeah. Took her months to sort through that because she didn't have the numbers.
Yeah.
Now, I know that there are software programs that you can ascertain today mm-hmm. where you can upload your wills, your trusts, your powers of attorney, all of that, healthcare directives,
right.
passwords, a key person that you might go to, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have access to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on, get to know your financial advisor. Industry research indicates 70% of widows fire their financial advisor in large measure because they never bothered to develop a relationship.
I can't emphasize that enough. When people say, well, he doesn't come to these meetings because it bores him, or she's not interested. I mean, that's the worst thing in the world. And I won't meet with one individual.
I've watched you do this.
I will
put
not
your foot
meet
down
with one.
And say,
no.
You know, it's not going to help you.
No.
If we're talking about your end of life planning and
yeah.
your retirement and financial planning, if your spouse, whether it's male or female, is not here.
And if I'm delivering a contract, I insist they're both there when I go over the contract with both of them. And I tell them, you're not going to be the one to administer your own long-term care insurance or your own life insurance. The person sitting next to you is.
Very important.
Yeah.
Make sure your accounts are titled properly. You know, once or twice every couple of years,
mm-hmm.
you should take a look at stuff because things change. People get divorced, and we've discussed the whole concept of the beneficiary designation on your retirement account with a remarriage or a next marriage, if you will, where that spouse gets all the money, even if you named your kids as the beneficiary.
Right. Well, kids also, you know, they turn out sometimes not the way you want, and you want to have a little
not
bit more
kids.
Control.
Not my kids.
I know.
We'll leave it there. Consolidated accounts. She is saying she mm-hmm. wished they had consolidated their accounts instead of having money all over Hex Half Acre.
Mm-hmm.
Familiarize yourself with probate, check beneficiary designations and titling, and the list goes on and on. If you want information on this, you want to get to Lynn Rowe, iwantmyltc.net. Have her set it up for you.
Do you have a car, truck, van, or SUV you're not using? You can donate your unwanted vehicle to Patriotic Hearts to help our veterans. And you'll get a tax deduction for your donation.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. A special thank you to Ms. Lynn Rowe, Certified Financial Planner. Lynn does just a fantastic job. She really does. And people would do very, very well to call her. 877-270-3127. We were talking about end-of-life planning, and, you know, nobody wants to talk about that, but it's going to happen to everybody, right?
Well, it has so far. 100% of the people have reached the end of their lives. The only ones who haven't are the ones who are still alive.
When I first met her, that's what she did for a living. She just worked exclusively with widows.
Yes.
And individuals that needed that kind of planning, mostly female.
And she's had people with her for 20-plus years. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you find somebody you like and trust, well, that's who you stick with.
Which reminds me of a conversation I had on the phone just the other day with my pal Tim and an individual from over in Arizona who will remain nameless, because we were talking about a strategy. And speaking, I was just talking with Lynn about annuities and all that stuff. And this fellow happens to have a bunch of annuities, and he doesn't need the money. He and his wife live frugally. I think he used the term cheap.
Cheap, frugal, there is no difference in my book.
But what was really fascinating and exciting all at the same time is they're in their late 70s. They buy anything they want. They go anywhere they want. They take their kids on vacations and grandkids on vacations.
Wow.
They live within their means in beautiful Arizona. And they have all these annuity contracts they've acquired over the years and don't need the money. And the question was, since we have a low basis, meaning that's how much you put in, and high gain, because they've owned these things for 25 years.
And right? They don't need the money, you said.
Don't need the money. How do we position them tax-wise and for the benefit of their kids and grandkids? And even I was a bit challenged, but not that much.
You were?
No, of course not.
I was going to say.
I did call Tim in because he's got more expertise in that area than I do, because he's the president of a big-time insurance company.
So this is a couple.
Yeah.
They're 80, you said?
78, 70, 78 and 79.
Okay, so close enough. They've had, I guess, all their annuities they've had for a long time.
Long
is that
time.
Correct?
I don't want to go into the numbers.
No, I don't care. They've had them for a long time.
They've got a lot of gain.
There's a lot of gain in these things.
So, first off, we have to explain what happens when you take money out of a non-annuitized annuity.
You're just taking money out.
If you take money out, you're taking out your interest first.
Earnings.
And they knew that. They're very smart people.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that that's not a very tax-wise thing to do, especially if you don't need the money. But they don't want to burden their kids who are also doing pretty well.
Well, here's the thing about these annuities, any annuity, really. First of all, the tax treatment, as you said, you take your earnings out first. Any money you take out is going to be taxed at ordinary income. It's going to be 100% taxable while you're taking the earnings out. Even if you inherit an annuity, even if you give it to somebody else, it doesn't matter. They have to pay ordinary income tax rates at whatever their tax rate is. So that's a consideration. When you have an annuity with a lot of gain, as these people apparently do, they have several, in fact, you said, any money they take out is going to be taxed. They don't. But you also said they don't need the money. Now,
it's all for the kids and the grandkids.
So it's all for, so they've got their nest egg, which presumably would be for them, but anything left over goes to the kids and the grandkids. But they've also got these annuities.
Right.
Now, are they covered for catastrophic events?
They've got ample cash to do that, yes. They do.
So if,
and they're uninsurable.
Okay. Oh, they're uninsurable at their age. Oh.
So, pray tell, how do you solve this problem?
Well, I thought
kids are going to pay a bunch of tax. Obviously, they could annuitize over 20 years. But as I explained, by doing that, you could spread out the tax, but your rate of return will not be that good.
You're saying the kids could do that when they inherit it? Or, you're talking
or
about
they
the,
could do or, it right now. But they're all in a pretty high tax bracket. The kids are in a high tax bracket, too. So it presented a challenge for my buddy Tim and me. Now, the reason I asked Tim to sit in on the call is because he knows about all these bonuses that some of these companies will do, because he runs a big insurance company.
Sure.
So he said, well, there are several companies that sell annuity contracts that will give you a bonus on the income base of up to 25%. And these same companies will pay a death benefit equal to the income base.
Okay, you said a mouthful there.
Yes, I did. That's why you're here.
You're going to have to break this down a little bit because people don't understand income base, although it's a very important part of many annuities.
It's a fake account.
It's
not a cash account. It's a fake account that you can translate or convert into an income stream for life. But this one company will give you 25% more. So let's just say at $100,000 and your basis was $30,000, you got $70,000 of gain. You could do a 1035 exchange into one of these annuities, and they would say your income base day one is $125,000. So you could take, call it 6% of $125,000 for the rest of your life, and when the money runs out, the money runs out. Or you could take nothing and have $125,000 plus future growth going into that annuity as a death benefit. So right off the bat, we solved a certain percentage of the tax problem for the kids because the death benefit would be enhanced by 25%. Now that's going to go down each year as the cash value grows and as they, you know, get closer to dying. But if they were to die in the next couple of years, that's $20,000, say, per $100,000 of free money to help the kids pay the taxes, which are probably in the 25 to 30% range.
The kids would be the beneficiaries of this, you're saying?
Yes.
They would receive the death benefit. Well, to me, there's no taxes paid on a death benefit on an insurance.
It's not insurance. It's an annuity.
Well, that's the thing. I'm saying an insurance product, which is what an annuity is. So when we say death benefit, I think people get the idea that, oh, wait a minute. Oh, it's tax-free.
No, it would be taxable to them because it's still an annuity with an enhanced cash value.
And because you had said they're not insurable,
right,
which means that because some of these annuities will provide you with a quote-unquote, it's a death benefit, meaning that you're guaranteed a certain amount or your heirs are when you're gone.
Yeah, I mean, one of the solutions could have been start annuitizing some of the money and buy a life insurance policy. But they said, probably can't because of various and sundry ailments that might cause an insurance company to charge them too much or not give them
or not give it to them at all.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
So that was the solution. I thought it was very creative. I thank Tim Morton for that.
So they're actually, in this case, they're using what's called the income base, but it becomes something of a real number.
All you really care about in that example is what's my internal rate of return upon death? Because the internal rate of return upon living and taking the money out is going to be whatever you earn. So if it's an index annuity, you'll get paid what the index pays. If it's a MIGA, you'll get paid what the MIGA pays. But in this particular case, whether it's a fixed, indexed, variable, whatever kind of an annuity, there is a death benefit that is enhanced. Rather than just getting the cash value, you would get the cash value plus some kind of an initial bonus that's translated into a taxable death benefit, in this case, to help the kids cover the taxes upon retirement. How's that?
I think it's great. You have an annuity with a heck of a lot of gain in it. Now, you can't do anything about the gain. When you 1035 exchange from one annuity into another, there's no tax consequence to that. But you also bring over the basis. So there's nothing really changing in that. It's the question of what the heirs are going to receive once they're gone in this case.
Yeah, so let's say they're in the 30% tax bracket to pick a number. So they've got $100,000, $30,000 basis, $70,000 of gain. They die, one of them dies, the kids get $100,000, $70,000 of which is subject to a 30% tax, $21,000 tax bill.
Right.
As opposed to $125,000, right?
The kids would get $125,000 by 1035 exchanging into this annuity.
Of which $95,000 is taxable, right?
Yeah. Is it?
I think so.
Yes, 30 minus, yes.
30% of that is $28,500 from $125,000. 28.5 minus, they'd get $96,500. So the impact is $3,500 instead of $21,000.
I would prefer to do that. Now, if you want to offer me an annuity on an inheritance and it doesn't have any of this stuff,
I just found money to me.
But if you can make it better for the heirs, if you give me a choice, would you rather pay $21,000 in tax or $3,500 or whatever the number was?
I think I'll take the lower number. I'm the recalculate.
That didn't sound right. That sounds way too low. But let's say twenty-one or sixteen thousand to make a number up. I'll pay the
Liberty
16.
Mutual customizes your auto insurance so you only pay for what you need. Why can't more things in life be customizable? Why can't I buy Neapolitan ice cream without strawberry? Can't I just have the chocolate and vanilla flavors I'm comfortable with? Do people even want a foodie ice cream flavor sandwiched right between the classics? Go to Liberty.
All right, so I checked my math. I've got to get Tim Morton to, you know, verify this, because I'm not the expert in this area, to be honest with you. But Tim is. And that's an amazing deal. What we're talking about, for those that just tuned in, is an individual that I actually had a conference with the other day, who's been a longtime listener, and I love getting the calls and the emails. Please call me or go to raylucia.com, click on the Ask Ray button, send me an email. Many times, if it's a complex situation like this one, I call in for reinforcements.
Well, you got to do that from time to time. We did that just a couple days ago.
Yep. So Tim is my reinforcement when it comes to some of these more complex strategies. And I know from just being around the block a couple times that many of these annuity companies have bonuses for death benefit purposes. So if you don't need the money for yourself to spend, and as we were discussing before the break, you're saving that money to give to your kids, but the taxes are going to, you know, eat away 30%
because in your case, in your example you gave, it was all in these annuities that they've had for years,
right?
And they've all got a lot of gain in them, a low basis and a lot of earnings.
And so, as it turned out, if the numbers are as Tim quoted, and again, I've got to verify that, it was an amazing deal. So if you happen to have a lot of gain in an annuity contract and you have no use for that money while you're alive, you're saving it for your kids or your grandkids, this could be a strategy worth exploring. I'd never, until a few minutes ago, put my calculator to it, and I'm blown away.
Well, can I just nutshell this so that I know?
Under the caveat that we may have gotten something wrong.
Well, we do. This is what we came up with. Well, this is what you came up with. This is how we worked it out. This couple leaving their annuity, lot of gain in it to their kids. If they did nothing and they just inherited these annuities straight and they left the old annuities, we figured on this, the kids would get roughly $79,000, assuming no growth in it. Net. They would get net after taxes, $79,000. Not bad. All right?
Right.
But if they had done this 1035 exchange into the annuity that you were suggesting that they do, you and Tim were suggesting that they do, working the math under the exact same scenarios, the kids would wind up with not $79,000, but $96,500. Now, again, it's a death benefit from an annuity. It's taxable. But besides that, the point is you wind up with almost $17,000 more simply by doing a tax-free 1035 exchange in this example, if we've done our math right.
Again, I don't sell them, so don't blame me. But I'm going to verify all this with Tim later on.
It would be funny if Tim looks at it and says, really? That's a good deal.
I'm going to buy one myself.
Wow. I didn't know it was that good.
Maybe I should do that.
You should talk to him today. Maybe tomorrow we can bring this up or
something.
We'll do that. And just make sure it's verified.
I think if that is for real, and I think it is, that's one heck of a strategy.
Now, what if they live, you know, what if they live a long time, 15 years?
It's even better.
Well, and we weren't sure because you had said, well, if they live longer, it's not as good a deal. But going by these numbers, it's actually a better deal.
It could be a better deal.
So that's why we got to really make sure that this is correct.
Well, we don't normally do this off the top of our heads. That's why we do emails off the top of our heads. So hit it, boys.
You've got mail.
Oh, I had a best practices email. I don't know if I can find it.
Forget about that.
All right,
that's
sorry.
Too complicated, too.
Yeah, I only got 5 minutes. So, Eric, if you hold on, maybe we can get to this, get to that tomorrow, if that's all right with you. Okay, good question from John and Teresa. I guess they emailed together.
Okay.
I earn over, well, okay, I earn over $225,000. Can I do a backdoor Roth IRA? Both my wife and I guess this is from John. Both my wife and I have rollover IRAs. We have about $40,000 of surplus money, wow, that we can save beyond the 401k plan, which is nice, I guess, if you make $225,000 a year. So he wants to, I guess they want to know, can they do what's called a backdoor Roth IRA?
You can. Teresa and what was it, John and Teresa?
Yes, I think John was the one emailing.
Okay. So John, here's the deal. You can do the backdoor Roth IRA, but it comes with some caveats, all right? So first off, you make in excess of, what is it, $203,000? Yeah. You phase out from, I think it's $193,000 this year to $202,999.
You call it $203,000.
Right.
Yes.
So you make more than that. So you can't do a Roth IRA.
You can't contribute.
Right.
Yes.
But you can do a backdoor Roth. What is a backdoor Roth? That's where John and Teresa both can put $6,000 this year into a non-deductible IRA and then convert it to a Roth, which gets you to the same place, kinda. Here's where your rub is. How much did they say they had in
rollovers?
Rollovers.
Just says we both have rollover IRAs. They didn't mention
okay.
How much.
So
that's where the sticking point comes.
So here's the thing, when you go to convert the post-tax money into a Roth IRA, which would make all the sense in the world, you've got some hoops to jump through. Because remember, an IRA is an IRA. Whether it's non-deductible or deductible, it's still an IRA. A non-deductible IRA is an IRA with basis, meaning you can't single it out like a Roth. It's all commingled. So the example I like to use, because it's easy to understand, is let's say you have $90,000 in a pre-tax IRA, and you've got $10,000 of contributions, of basis, of post-tax contributions in an IRA. So now you've got $100,000 in total IRAs, of which $10,000 is post-tax. You decide you want to convert $10,000 into a Roth. You think you're going to get all $10,000 of the post-tax money into a Roth, but you don't. You'll only get $1,000, 10%, because 10% of the money in the IRA represents basis, post-tax basis. The other 90% represents pre-tax money. You'll have to pay the taxes on it.
They have a 401k. Now, we don't know how much they have or if their 401k plan allows it. If they really wanted to do this, they could maybe potentially take some of that IRA money or take all the pre-tax IRA money and potentially roll it over into their 401k plan, leaving nothing but post-tax money. But is it worth it? I don't know.
To what he can do with the $40,000 a year.
Doggone it.
We'll have to do that mañana, as they say.
Yes.
South of the border.
In the meantime, there's some great strategies.
Are we out of time?
Well, you got about 30 seconds.
Okay.
I was just going to suggest that there are better good strategies that John can use. I wish we had more time because it's one of my favorite things to talk about.
Okay. Well, one of my favorite things to talk about is food, and I'm getting a little hungry.
Oh, all right. You're going to take a little food break here?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you know, in some places, the show continues.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Tell your friends and neighbors about the Ray Lucia Show. Would you do that? Do me a favor, please. Or email me, or both. RayLucia.com. Click on the Ask Ray button.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at BizTalkRadio.com.
Answering questions about your biggest financial challenges.
A promise was made. A promise that hit the beaches of Normandy. A vow that captured Iwo Jima. A contract that weathered Tet. A pledge that stormed the desert in Iraq. An IOU that braved IEDs in Kandahar. A promise was made to America's veterans. DAV fights to keep that promise. So all